Live from across Europe, this is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, in London, with my lovely co-host, Kieran, in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
It's hot again, I don't like it.
Yes, it's hot here too. It's not good. I'm really appreciating my numerous fan purchases from the previous heatwave. Yeah. No air conditioning yet, because I would have known to put it. It's London. Not only is there no air conditioning, there's no space to put any air conditioning if you wanted it.
Not only is there no air conditioning, there's no space for anything else.
It's not hot because of the weather, it's hot because I'm touching the person next to me at all times. This week, we are not going to talk about the G7 and the various bullshit related to that. And we are not going to talk about, what else happened? Tusk called Boris Johnson Mr. No Deal, and a lot of the media is like, ooh, clever nickname. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, we're all waiting for Tusk's Netflix special.
I swear to God, if Tusk after this has a Netflix special, that would be incredible. Because again, I need to remind people of the last year when he released his office released like a movie trailer style thing for his agenda. Which is dramatic music and then like giant titles flying at the screen.
It's like Requiem for a Dream esque shit.
Yeah, but it was all things like plenary sessions. What was this?
But that combined with the like first video he made when he became like. Position he has where he's like clearly speaking English for the first time ever.
Yeah, and as Prime Minister of Poland, that wasn't really a problem previously, but you know.
No.
Well, actually, that relates quite closely to what we're going to talk about is the job that used to actually encompass a lot of what Tusk's job is now, the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union. Colloquially termed as just the rotating EU presidency or the rotating presidency of the European Union, both of which are actually very inaccurate for what the role actually is, and etc. This is part of our recurring section, Pie in the Sky, where we discuss a topic which is at the top of no one's agenda and therefore unlikely to be changed soon, but is actually in drastic need of change. And or is an idea that there is no political will for, and therefore is a pie-in-the-sky idea. But I think there's a progressive, good reason to change this or get rid of it. So I'm going to run through what this is, because it's when it's talked about, it's basically you get the country that's getting it, a mischaracterization of what the title of it is, and then some vague bullet points about what they said the agenda is going to be for it. However, again, it's the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union, not the European Council, not the Council of Europe. They're all different things. Nothing to do with the Parliament. It's nothing to do with the Commission. It is the body that is all of the... It's one minister from every member state. That changes based on the topic they're discussing. So it's, if they're talking about financial policy, it'll be all the finance ministers. If it's agricultural policy, it'll be all the agriculture ministers, etc. And the idea is that one country, it's not an individual person in the role, and like the national government has this job. They are the head of it for 6 months, and that changes every 6 months. And it's supposed to have two jobs. It's supposed to be, they basically organize all of the meetings, and like once you get including like lower level staffer meetings, meetings to decide on the agenda for future meetings, things that would be below ministerial level, you actually get into the hundreds of meetings in the 6 month period, hundreds to thousands. So actually, that is quite a big administrative job, but I guess that's not really why it's sold as an important thing for a country to have at any specific time. Theoretically, they also write the agendas for all of these meetings, so there is some sort of agenda setting power associated with it. And the second role is they represent the council in relation with other EU institutions, but. Since the council is made up of ministers of the government of people who sit on the European Council, which is all the heads of state, and then that has a permanent head for 5-year cycles. So currently it's Donald Tusk.
Yes.
So this gets into the confusing thing of why this exists now. It previously, like, so prior to the Lisbon Treaty, prior to 2007, it was the European Council and the Council of the European Union were not different things. There was effectively the heads of state would informally meet anyway, and that didn't really have a formal structure. There was no head of that body, and then there was the body that was supposed to be the legislative body, which was what the council, this council is now, where people attending the meeting would change depending on what they were talking about, in that you send the most relevant minister because they're going to have information about what that department would do, and how it would interact with any legislation the EU passed on this. But because you've separated these out, and the heads of state often end up working out a lot of this stuff separately in the European Council, and because they have someone who's known to the media as a permanent head of that body, they often end up, as Tusk has, being a more important, like a much more important role, and they will have sapped up the majority of the like importance that the current national government that was head of the body had. The other thing they did was they used to kind of have more of a foreign affairs role, so they were not just representative of the Council of the European Union, they were representative of the EU abroad as a thing, like on a rotating six-month thing. But there's now a commissioner which does that job. There's like the foreign affairs chief, which is currently Federica Mogherini, and might be Sorelli? Is Sorel? Is that the crazy Spanish guy's name?
Oh god, what's his name again?
Borrell,
yes.
Yeah, so like that job has also been sapped up by a permanent role that kind of effectively came into play. Like the Lisbon Treaty did a few things. One, it empowered the parliament a lot more. So to a certain extent, the supremacy of the legislation being brought up by the Council of the European Union was lessened. So therefore, whoever gets to be in charge of it has less power. Then the council became a permanent thing by itself with its own permanent head. So a lot of that power gets sapped away as well. So actually a lot of what the role of the rotating presidency was and conceptually is kind of they're the lesser rotating in version of it, and they do a lot of the administrative work to keep things running smoothly, and kind of, yes, they set agendas for meetings, but a lot of their like goals that whatever country is in charge at the time set tend to be quite vague. So the Finnish one currently has like empower or like strengthen the role of Europe as a climate leader. They want like rule of law improvements, but again, that's kind of just we're going to discuss it, but Hungary's going to say no and Poland's going to say no. So like setting the agenda, like there's no weight behind setting the agenda. Being the president of it doesn't necessarily have a lot of like power associated with it. So it is largely the administrative role. And therefore saying you like bigging it up to a certain extent is kind of empty to an extent. And this has actually been brought up as a good thing in a few media outlets talking about this. I found there's one like notable one that said it quite explicitly. There was an article in The Guardian when Finland has it now, and prior to that Romania had it, and because a lot of people are unhappy with the Romanian government and a lot of quote-unquote corruption reforms they're bringing in or getting like weakening the power of their anti-corruption lawyers, this is kind of brought up as like, oh, is it dangerous for them to be head of the Council of the European Union? Again, but this was phrased as rotating EU presidency. that implies a lot more power. But then, towards the end of that article talking about that, they then said, but actually, it's a good thing that this presidency isn't what it used to be, because a lot of their power has been sapped away. It's kind of like, cool, so what you're saying is, like, oh, it's a big deal that Romania is getting this, but it's also not that big a deal. to another extent. Like, they do have the day-to-day running agenda-setting power, but, like, they're probably not going to fuck that up, necessarily. Mm. It's just, it's more of a, we're going to talk about slightly different things at meetings than we were going to, but realistically, not a lot is going to happen out of it, and them being president is somewhat meaningless, but is kind of insinuated to be more important. They've also structured it differently because there are now so many EU countries. They go in groups of three. So Romania, Finland, and Croatia. So Finland's currently in the presidency, and Croatia will get it next. They all sit down and come up with. They all have their individual quote unquote agendas, and then they all come up with an 18-month long-term agenda to have as like. Oh, this is like going to be a through line through all of them. So, like, the climate will often be was on all of their agendas. So it's become one of the 18-month long agendas. And you're like, well, yeah, sure, I guess. But it's been sold as something that's much more meaningful than it actually is. Mm. And it did used to be a bigger deal, which is why we're still talking about it, but. I guess it probably needs changing again for, in my mind, two main reasons. One, it's incredibly confusing because it always gets referred to as something that it's not. And once explaining what it is requires re-explaining a legislative body that has a name that no one remembers because it has basically the same name as two other bodies that are completely unrelated.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of problems with it. I guess this gets on to one of the big downsides that's kind of come to the forefront a bit more now is it's become more of a problem, which is corporate sponsorship of the rotating presidency.
Pepsi presents New Zanzibar.
So this is basically that. So it was Coca-Cola presents the Romanian vision for Europe. This got quite a lot of coverage because the Romanian presidency was sponsored by Coca-Cola while, like, one of the big agendas being set across Europe was, you know, climate change and the problem of, like, pollution, which is, you know, and also there's an obesity problem. And there's an obesity problem specifically in Romania that's, like, worse in Romania than some other places. Mm. So being sponsored by Coca-Cola seems like an odd move. There are two formal questions that were brought up by MEPs that I want to highlight. First, there was one of the MEPs from Reunion, the island that France controls.
Yes.
MEP Omergy from the Nordic Green Left, GUE, NGL. He effectively asked the Council of the European Union itself, saying that from like this was forwarding from a consumer protection NGO had brought this up and that he wanted to follow up on it. So he said he wanted to basically get clarification that there was no conflict of interest in having these corporate sponsors. So he asked three questions. He asked, can the council certify that the official partners financing the presidency's activities exert no influence on the political choices made by the EU Council presidency? Again, it's the Council of the European Union presidency. can the government which is running the presidency publish details of the partnership agreement signed with each official partner? Which, again, rings alarm bells in my head of, wait a minute, there's an official corporate sponsor of like an official EU activity of which there is no documentation published anywhere. It should cool. And then three, does the council plan to restrict practice of partnerships with multinationals so as to completely eliminate the risk of conflict of interest in decision making by the rotating presidency of the council? Do you have any guesses as to what the what the council said in response to this?
It was probably along the lines of, we'll get back to you.
No, it's worse. the organization of the presidency, including a decision to seek sponsorships for elements of the presidency, is a matter for the member state authorities concerned. It is not for the council to reply to the question that are the responsibility of its presidency. Effectively, what they've said is, we're not responsible for what activities the president of our body does. We're separate. It's like, I don't think you are. That's like... Like, to an extent, that's asking it. That's like asking a cabinet member, what is your, like, your prime minister said this. How does that relate to your area? And you just being like, I'm not responsible for what the prime minister says. Like, what? Wait, you're, what? I technically, yeah. No. Stop. So that was in March of this year when the Romania is sponsored by Coca-Cola thing was at full hype. So then following up on that, one of the Spanish MEPs from Ciudadanos, Renew MEP. So again, this isn't like a fringe, like a, you could argue a, oh, like the left are complaining about this. It's like, no, this is the center parties are also suspicious of this. This is a weird practice. They're basically saying that this has been going on for 10 years, that to some extent there's been private sponsorship, and that the point publicly that is made about it is that it's to meet some of the costs associated with doing this. So, like, arranging a lot of these meetings, like, most of them are Brussels-based, but then you have some events in your home country, and that will cost money, and then, so the government's not out of pocket, they get corporate sponsorship, which, I mean, sure, because I guess the way to fix that would be for the EU to pay for it. In order to like agree that if you all agree this is necessary, you should all agree to pay for it. There shouldn't be a that we need to ask Coca-Cola to appear. But they said at best this practice is at odds with the European Code of Good Administrative Behavior. At worst, it violates basic standard of political ethics to which EU institutions should adhere. Undermines impartiality, yada yada yada. Yeah, I agree with that. And then, so this is the question not to the Council of the European Union, because they have previously answered the question, this question, as, you know, to the reunion MEP saying that we don't care, we're not responsible. They're effectively asking the Commission to look into this. They're saying, will the Commission assess the potential impact that these sponsorships are having on the impartialities of, because effectively the Council of the European Union exists as a area specific legislation writing machine.
Yes.
And if you put someone in charge of it, and then the only way they can actually be in charge of it is to accept corporate money, then you're writing the laws that regulate the companies that are, this is an obvious problem. So basically they've asked, is there any plan to introduce any rules on these practices, because they're obviously unethical. There's been no answer to this yet. It's been about a month.
Nice.
There's been no answer, but I guess, you know, summer. Yoko was on holidays.
He was busy.
Yeah, you know. Kind of egregiously, as I pointed out in several articles about this, there's the currently the Finnish presidency is their main sponsor is BMW, but I guess the other issue is kind of individual events they're holding in their capacity as, oh, you have to send a delegate every country because we're holding an official EU thing brought to you by this local big company or multinational, and you're like, what, that, like, you're, it's kind of mandatory that they attend, because you're going to be, you know, writing legislation and making important decisions at these meetings, and requiring people to attend a meeting that is held, like, sponsored by like a big car company or something is a bit sketchy.
Yeah.
So the Finnish one, their main sponsor is BMW. And a point that's brought up is that allowing this practice at all effectively makes it inherently very hard to track, because people have noticed, for instance, that a lot of the cars and stuff that are used for transport for these events are now BMW cars for this 6 months. It's, well, yeah, again, this is just like, there's just, like, I guess they're paying for advertising, but it's an opportunity for extreme advertising that probably shouldn't be allowed, because they might be discussing changing EU rules on emissions, and it's brought to you by BMW, and you're like, well, there's no one checking to make sure that's not happening. So
nice.
Yeah, so if you look at the upcoming presidency, which is the Croatian presidency, there's instances of like Croatian-based PR firms posting advice of how you can, at this point, preempt potential advantages for your business and ways to get in and sponsor individual events that will benefit you and promote Croatian business. And again, like, the promoting Croatian business part of it isn't inherently bad, and maybe that is what is left of what the presidency is for, but having it completely unchecked is, you know, it's not just a benefit for the member states, like, commerce. It's a opportunity for big multinationals with broader agendas to have an opportunity to get a seat at the table they might not otherwise have. Well, they would have in some degree, but they wouldn't have in this sense. So I guess the pie in the sky question is there a better rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union, or should you get rid of it, or leave it the way it is? Do you think it's good? Think it's great? I think you think it's great.
So my suggestion is some sort of rotating food market. Like, for 6 months we just get like pierogies or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 6 months after that it's like gyros.
Right, yeah. So what you could have, a rotating catering requirement. So all of the food served in Brussels and Strasbourg in the EU buildings have to be from a different member state every 6 months.
Almost, but that still seems a little too elitist for my taste. I genuinely... Okay, so the thing that happens with this rotating presidency is that it does generate a lot of like press fanfare.
Yeah.
It does seem like a very easy story to write of this EU country is inheriting the presidency. Here's why that might be bad. That tends to be like a major kind of talking point of this.
But in some cases, the like I remember growing up when I remember Ireland 6 months EU presidency, and the thing it does do, which was brought up as a point quite heavily when there was talk of, oh, should somebody like should the powers that be get involved and like delay Romania's taking over the presidency because we're concerned about their government's activities, and the counterpoint to that effectively is, yeah, but so. Popularity of the EU in Romania is quite high now, and if you start doing things where you're like, we're just going to start excluding you because you're not part of the club, that might affect sentiment of the EU, and you're actually losing an opportunity to really sell EU values in Romania, whatever that means, but in kind of a, okay, we're acknowledging that Romania is causing problems generally, but should we be excluding them from this, like, somewhat unimportant, largely ceremonial role that they can use locally to, like, drum up support for the EU? And
I mean, no, that's kind of not what I'm saying. I mean, I was just more arguing the fact that this is, like, the easy article that's written, because it is that false assumption that this rotating presidency has a lot more power. So it is, like, you'll get the Guardian article of, like... Maybe not the Guardian, but you'll get an article about like, oh, Romania is taking over the EU presidency. Romania has some corruption problems. Now, the EU might be corrupt, kind of thing. And it's a very like simple argument, and it does seem to happen almost every time we get a new rotating presidency. Maybe it didn't happen for Finland.
Yeah, no.
well, like, I guess... Finland has been called a couple of times in recent years like the sick man of Europe because they haven't been like growing as much as economists say they should be or whatever.
And they have a big like emigration problem.
Yeah, it seems to be like they seem to just, for a journalist's point of view, the rotating presidency only exists as like a handy segue to write an article about this country. Like here's an excuse to talk about this country apropos of nothing else.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like, okay, so if our main aim here, if the only thing we can come back and say, look, the only thing this thing does really is drum up support for the EU as this like massive PR stunt, then yeah, just like throw a food festival. Like, do something that is a bit more just openly cultural, because that seems to be the fun stuff that does happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, there's like a rotating presidency, oh, it's in Finland, and there'll be like this huge PR push and everything will look very like traditionally Finnish, and there'll be talk of food, and this festival is like exclusively only for people who happen to be in this very specific part of Helsinki during that day, and all the dignitaries are there.
Yeah,
I say expand that aspect of it and get rid of everything else.
Yeah, that's actually not dissimilar to like my my suggestion would be like more it would have more of a so effectively the there's two problems. One is this corporate sponsorship thing is that seems like an easy fix to get rid of, but the way to do it would be to spend money, which people don't like. But you already have a situation where everyone travels to Brussels for most of these meetings, and what I find notable about the stuff from Croatian PR firms talking about this was, like most European most rotating European presidencies, this will be mostly Brussels based. And it's like, but why can't you make this a every 6 months we change what country we have all of our meetings for, the not necessarily the European Council, but you could have, because that would probably be an undue security cost burden, I would say, if all the heads of state suddenly for 6 months go to a different country each time. It'd be like, well, it's quite expensive for us to maintain the security of the president of France, the chancellor of Germany, the head of the United Kingdom. Like, all those, that might be like an undue, that might actually not be quite popular. But you could do the ministers, have all their together meetings in that country, and then it's not so much a rotating presidency in the sense that it is now, in that a representative from your country chairs all the meetings and writes the agendas and does the organizational bit of it, and is supposed to be the one that gets sent to the meetings where this body is presenting to the other to the parliament or the European Council. Or someone from the commission. You can keep all that stuff. That stuff is fine, but then actually make it it would be more of a bringing Europe together thing if it was a cool. So we're just not going to meet in Brussels, except when Belgium. In fact, no. When Belgium has it, they meet in somewhere else. They meet in one of the other cities. Wallonia and Flanders can flip a coin each time.
Or it can be in both. It has to be on the border.
Brussels is effectively the idea of Brussels, isn't it? It's like,
no, it's, Brussels is in the middle of Flanders.
It's like a weird, not really Flandersy city in Flanders.
Well, yeah, no, because this is the thing with Brussels. Brussels is like a French-speaking city, like an enclave surrounded by all sides by Flanders.
You mean just pick like a village on the border and make that? I actually think that because it would be difficult to argue the case that there isn't like ample conference space in every like European capital or at least a large city. Yeah. And that you could do that. I think that would make a lot more sense. It would be a boondoggle for the European Union to have to pay for this. But realistically, in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't cost that much money. And I think the PR of your country is important enough for all of our legislative writing meetings to now happen in your country for 6 months. You could make it shorter. You can make it 3 months if that turns out to be like too much of a problem. But it would be actually be a really good example of, so all of our money for these meetings isn't getting spent in one place. It's getting spent in a different place every few months. It's like, yes, it would cost more money generally, but it'd be, you're actually distributing that money around all the countries.
So my other plan, my other aspect of this, all right, let's imagine, for the sake of argument, we have like French rotating presidency for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think there should be a French culture and food festival that is like going on tour everywhere but France for that 6 months and the rest of Europe.
Yes. Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, and yeah, it'd just be great if that would be great, because it's, how long does it take for this to loop back around to like the one country twice? Because, anti-European sentiment could probably rise in that period of time.
14 years. You could make it shorter. You could make it 3 months. I'm like, so my I think we could do both. I think I think there could it could be the sense of do something related to that's good for the country that gets it, and then something that's spreading information about that country around Europe.
Mm.
In the sense of like a fruit festival or something, where they get to do one bit of like outreach in all the other member states that goes around for that period of time. But you can make it 3 months, and then it would rotate around faster.
I'm not saying rotating around faster. I'm just saying that you like not only do you have to do something within that country, you should also do something without
externally.
Like,
externally,
because it's. The idea that we have to, the example you gave from Romania where it boosted like EU sentiment, like, okay, but we're waiting 14 years again until it comes back to Romania, and we have to hope that like there isn't some sort of weird isolationist ascended fascism in that period of time, which is not necessarily guaranteed.
No, they've sat down and worked out 14 years is the exact amount of time you need them to revisit.
But yeah, you could do something like, maybe it doesn't even have to be like a big, huge culture fest that goes on tour, but like money set aside that facilitates the French population of every other one of the countries to come out and do stuff.
Yeah,
because like I'm particularly thinking of the French now, but there is like a hidden French population in Ireland. They are there; they're just not very pronounced.
Yeah.
But like you definitely could host, and it has happened before, I'm sure, like French food and culture festivals within Ireland during that 6 months. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be on tour. Like it, just because you have it in Ireland doesn't mean like Germany is going without, because Germany also has like a French population, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think that's such a, I think that's really cool. I think to reform this, you need to make it two layers. I think the problem with it now effectively is that it's very largely ceremonial, and there seems to be a lot of like time spent on PR to make it sound good, but it's there's very little evidence that it's beneficial in any way. Whereas having the event somewhere, by the event I mean all of their regular meetings. Because again, like most, like a lot of the, like the point of this body is not for it's not like the commission, it's not permanent staff that are always in Brussels, and it's not like the problem of the parliament going to Strasbourg every once in a while, where you move lots of people who are generally based in Brussels randomly to Strasbourg is the French complaint. you'd be getting there's not necessarily a good reason why the Council of the European Union needs to meet in Brussels. They're supposed to be, you know, preparing legislation and discussing EU level policy in their respective fields. It's really, really not important where they are, as realistically as long as they're in Europe and it's accessible. But you know, inter-European travel is easy, and effectively now you just have everyone travels to Brussels, which I mean, it's relatively in the center of Europe, but I mean, it's not super great that it happens to mostly be in Brussels, and then there's a few things in the country. Why not just have everything in the country and that make that the thing? And there's the they rent out some office space for 3 months and book a load of conference and meeting rooms in that country, and it's a thing that happens.
Yeah,
or use offices the fucking government owns in that country.
I think there's also one other thing you could do for this period of time, which would require a bit more coordination, and is more like something you can't really legislate for, but something you could maybe encourage culturally, which is, it'd be kind of cool during that 6 months if, say, like, the GUNGL were to, like, kind of host events and operate out there, like, out in, again, say, France, specifically, and as a part of their participation in it, like, talk about situations that are, like, happening in France and how they relate to other parts of the EU. They basically have like a part of the 6 months where this probably goes along with the whole convincing everyone that the EU is the sum of its parts kind of thing, because I feel like a lot of these top level European level parties tend to talk exclusively about like things happening at a European level rather than saying stuff that's happening at like the French national level is like affecting the EU, blah blah blah. And you could just have...
That's actually a really good idea, yeah.
Yeah, we have 6 months and maybe even encourage, like, think tanks and policy wonks and whatever to, like, investigate and look into, like, stuff that's happening in France in particular and, like, how this relates. And use this period of time as a means of shouting to the rest of Europe about what the situation in France is. And rather than making it, like, supposedly impartial or coming from the government, encourage every think tank and party to do this. So if you want the left perspective of what's happening in France, then you have GUNGL there to talk about it.
That's like I think all like all the parties could jump on that. Like
it's, that's what I mean.
Once you create a like a big event that has to happen in that country, and that country can pick, that country's government can pick what city it happens in. It doesn't have to be the capital. Every I think you'd probably shorten it to 3 months, every 3 months, and then it would be less of a, like, 6 months it might just be drawn out a bit much, and it might be too expensive, but every or like expensive for that country, because they probably end up spending some of the money, like then it would draw attention to that country, and the individual parties could definitely jump on that as a, well, we can drum up local support for if you're a pro-European party, which most parties in most European countries are. This is the thing, is like you would get pushback from the anti-European parties that are would be lauding this as another like big waste of money on the European level. But it's more difficult to make that argument when occasionally that money comes around to you and it attracts attention to your country, and you're like, it's hard to argue with all the European members are like, Italy's the best, let's all go to Italy, and then or the Brotherhood of Italy or whatever their name is are just like, Europe sucks. they think we're great. I think this is like a lot. I think it'd just be a lot more welcoming to a lot of the smaller countries, especially to kind of, as opposed to just giving them a more tokenistic thing that to a large extent, like the agenda of the Lisbon Treaty was restructuring Europe, giving more power to the Parliament, but also like, it centralized a lot of power in the council. Once they made the council the head of states, it did kind of neuter this body that was supposed to be writing most of the legislation, to kind of not really that role, and kind of strengthened the commission in a lot of ways, and that really did centralize a lot of power, and maybe separating it out a bit via something like this, some sort of rotating, in order to make it fairer to other countries, might be a good call. I was worried that when we were talking about this, that we'd just both be of the opinion that we should just scrap this entirely.
I mean, if it was scrapped, I wouldn't lose any sleep.
No, it would fix the weird corporate sponsorship problem, because you have the opinion of the Council of the European Union appears to be, it's up to the member states to guard their own, like their government to guard their own ethics. It's not up to us to police, member states' national governments, but that effectively is the problem. It's not actually an EU problem. It's a, well, every member state that gets this has decided they don't want to pay for it, so they're going to take corporate money to do so, and who knows if that's affecting the agenda setting or not. It's unclear. Sure, be fine. It'll be fine the way it is.
At the moment it kind of stands as this weird vehicle for like corporate corruption to like enter into the EU, which is weird. So I say we turn it into largely a food festival. So if it has corporate sponsorship, it's fine.
And in fact, a food festival might need corporate sponsorship from like the big food producers of that country.
Yeah, right? Well, look at all these opportunities here. Yeah, but I think what we're saying is shorten it, make some sort of actual like political responsibility, or where the Council of Europe actually has to be held in these countries.
My suggestion of having it in making all of the meetings of the body happen in that country actually is, if anything, it gives them no extra power. Actually, it gives them a larger burden of administration. But I feel like the actual PR boost of it, which at this point is one of the main points of it, is much better and is actually a distributive way of spending money, as opposed to what the current system is.
Yeah. And then lastly, some sort of 3 month long or whatever long pro X country festival happening in all the other countries because it's close to lunchtime and I'm hungry.
You gotta eat.
You gotta eat. And watch French traditional dance, which I'm sure is probably a thing.
Nah, nobody wants that.
Oh. And that was another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is produced and recorded by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. Those are our lovely voices. If you like the show, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That kind of stuff really helps a lot. Another way you can support the show is to tell your friends about it. I know it seems small, but it actually does help. If you know someone in your life who thinks might be interested in this, you know, tell them about it. Be like, hey, listen to this cool podcast about food festivals. You can also want to materially support us for giving us some money to keep the podcasting lights on. You can donate some money on our Patreon, patreon.com/previouslyinEurope. This is where we tell you that there's different levels and stuff like that that you can donate to, and one of those levels or any level above actually means we shout out your name right now, like these cool people: Dermot Burke, Drew Azarian, Justin Paul Salmons, Lisa Shalagina, Michael Hall, Newt, Niall McLaughlin, and Subliminal Kid. So if you donate over $1 a month, you get to your name shouted out like that. That's pretty cool, right? Woo! Other ways you can support us is follow us on social media. We have a Facebook group. Just search Previously in Europe and you'll find us. We also have a Twitter account, Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. There Hugh kind of yells at people in a really nice way. That's his whole strategy right now. And if you have any questions, you can hit us up at previouslyineurope@gmail.com. And all of this information is available at previouslyineurope.eu. Thanks for listening.